Please note that this podcast is intended to give advice to ostomates. The information given is based on personal experiences and should not be taken as clinical advice. Please consult with your stoma care nurse if you are in need of medical advice. Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk, episode 11. This podcast is brought to you by Pelican Healthcare, a manufacturer of stoma care products and their bag, the Moda V. You can head to www.pelicanhealthcare.co.uk to have a look at any of the products that we discuss within the podcast. The link to their website will be provided in the bio. So today I am joined by Chris, who goes under Sydney Stoma. So hi, Chris.
Hello, you're on.
Yeah, and Chris has done a podcast with us before. I think it was the intimacy, wasn't it, following surgery for the men podcast.
Yeah.
But today we are talking about working life, like pre and after surgery. Obviously, I'm a dad pan, so I've been going on 14 years in and out of work, surgeries and everything else. But my the work that I do, I have to use my brain rather than use my body. So I'm always limited to kind of desk work or running between offices, which is a favourite one at the moment. And we're on the top floor and the office I need to go to is down on the bottom floor. So I'm up and down those stairs like a yo-yo. Chris works for the police and is a sergeant. You're a sergeant, aren't you?
I am indeed.
And I know from like personal experience with family members that I've got that are in the Met that we do tend to have some interesting conversations, but nothing ever tends to be spoken about with regards to like the Disability Act, the Equality Act, obviously being chronically ill and having had surgeries, that there's so many allowances that have to be made that we have to think about. Not to forget probationary periods, the terms and conditions of whichever company that you're working for at the time, because time off means they're not making money because they're paying you, but you're not doing the work. And it just all becomes a bit of a minefield. So, I mean, how was you like pre-surgery? Because, I mean, how long have you been a police officer now, Chris?
13 years now. So I was diagnosed with Crohn's when I'd been in the police a couple of years, was when I was diagnosed. So because I was already in the police, I was pretty much done my 2-year probationary period. And then, yeah, I started to get really, really quite unwell. So I did have a lot of time off. I
think a 2-year probationary period?
Yeah, it is, yeah. It's long, isn't it?
I thought the 2-year probationary for new drivers was long enough. I'm like, not don't get points. Is that like that with the police as well? Don't get points. Sorry,
don't be naughty in your first 2 years. Yeah, it's a long time, 2 years, but it goes really quick because in that 2 years you've got 21 weeks of initial training, which is classroom based. Then you're out with a tutor constable, so you're out with a tutor, and so by the time you finished being a tutor, you've already done best part of a year anyway, so it does go quite quick.
I say 2 years though. That's a long time, long time.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And there's me thinking my probationary period of 3 months was long.
Yeah, it is long, but it goes quick. It's just the way it's always been, and it'll always be that way. And yeah, just kind of get on with that. So yeah, I'd done my 2 years probation when I was diagnosed, but the job were quite reasonably supportive, so I didn't have any big dramas. Like I said, I did have quite a bit of time off on one occasion. I had 9 months off in one hit, and the force paid my sickness for the whole 9 months at full pay, so they were very supportive. But there were occasions when I was going off sick on a regular basis for weeks at a time. But like I say, they did kind of support me in that. So if you've got a supportive employer, then that takes a bit of stress away.
I mean, it's always good to have a supportive employer. I mean, my background, I don't really talk about my work life a lot to be fair, I mean, I'm doing my diploma at the moment, which is something I started a very, very, very long time ago and kind of had to stop after 3 years because my health got really bad after having Maisie. And so my background is forensic and financial fraud.
Right.
For me to be able to do the forensic and financial fraud at the time for the banks that I was working for, I had to be fully trained in how to access ledgers, read ledgers, suspense accounts, as well as picking up high value frauds like within the companies that were with the specific banks that I was working for. And I always find it quite funny because back then we didn't have the same rights that we have now. We weren't covered under the Equality Act. We wasn't really covered under the Disability Act either. You're not really classed as disabled, are you, until you've had a stoma.
Yeah.
And I went back to work after 10 months off after having Maisie with my stoma. Like I said to you before, like we started the podcast, I had the issue with back then the bags used to have clips and not Velcro and offloading in front of my entire like team at the time. And I was absolutely fine for a couple of years. And then in 2012, I applied for a higher up position that I already had, thinking that I'd be absolutely fine and I'd pass the probationary period. I did not pass the probationary period because three months in, I felt really, really ill again, had to have another 3 months off of work. And I either had to resign, which would have left me without a lot, would have left me up creek without a paddle at the time, or I could let them sack me. And I was like, fine, sack me. Because if you sack me, at least I can go to the job centre and claim job seeker's allowance until I can get myself sorted and work out what I'm going to do and where I'm going to be. And, you know, I was doing that job for 10 years. That was 10 years of my life that I'm never going to get back, all because they didn't want to pay me out a higher salary because of the amount of time that I'd had off over a 5-year period, which, in all fairness, wasn't my fault.
No.
And can't mention names because I could get into trouble. They might track me down even after a name change now. But you know, it after having my reversal, which is obviously what caused the other issues, I couldn't get a job for when did I have my surgery? I had my surgery in 2016. I couldn't get a job for 4 years. Wow. Because every job that I applied for, the minute they turned around and said to me, how much time have you had off in the last year? Last year.
All of it.
All of it, most of it. And then obviously there's making the allowances for hospital appointments and medications and everything else. It was just crazy. So I was basically unemployable for 4 years. And it's just happened to me that I've kind of got back into my accounting and bookkeeping, because obviously that's what I've done my training for. It's what I've educated myself for. Mm-hmm. And I'm now going through the rest of my diploma to mean that I can deal with limited companies, because at the moment I'm only covered with my license up to a specific floor level, shall we say, for self-employed people. I need to have that license to be able to cater for any like company that has like earns over £200,000 per year, which is why I'm doing what I'm doing now and kind of fast tracked it. It's meant to be 2 years. I'm doing it over the course of a year.
Yeah.
Don't know why I've done that to myself, but it's just crazy to think that for some of us that we have this surgery to improve our quality of life and for us to be able to work and to be able to be in gainful employment, because let's face it, those 4 years of sitting on benefits and having benefits coming in, okay, I had the added onus of because I was ill, I could claim for ESA rather than JSA, but it's still not a nice feeling. And I remember ringing up the benefits office when I was finally got gainful employment, and I was like, I don't need to claim it no more. And they're like, well, if you're earning, I went, no, I'm earning more than that a week. So it's not the point. And she said, you sound so happy. And I was like, yeah, I've been wanting to get off of this for years. So getting back into work is always such a thing for me, because I've always had a lot of pride and I don't like just sitting about and not doing anything. But how does that work for you within the police force? Because obviously you had surgery whilst you were serving police officers. So how does that work?
So it was quite straightforward, really. I just told them. I mean, I had had loads of surgeries before I had my stoma surgery. I had lots of, I think I had, we worked it out, I had 25 operations in just under 5 years.
That's five a year.
Yeah, that's a lot of time. you know, some of them are only minor surgeries, you know, just draining an abscess, cutting it out, and then allowing that to heal. So I had lots of fistula issues and abscess issues. So I wasn't off for long with those. Wasn't off for huge amounts of time, but they all added up because, like I say, there was 25 of those operations, or between 20 and 25 operations in 4.5 years. So for me, I was always worried about it. The job were always, or the police were always very supportive, but I was always having the back of my mind, to what point are they going to say, enough's enough? You're having an awful lot of time off. We're going to medically retire you, because they can do that. So that caused me a lot of anxiety. I kept thinking, sooner or later, they're just going to medically retire me. They're not going to want to keep paying me when I'm not there. So then having stoma surgery was quite a relief, because I was pinning my hopes on my stoma surgery pretty much ending most of my issues. And thankfully it did. So when I had my stoma surgery, I had 3 months off for that. That was all paid, so I didn't have to worry about that. And then there was a nice recovery period back at work. I went back on reduced hours for a little while and just kind of built it back up again. Again, even on reduced hours, I was still getting paid a full-time salary. So that was nice. And then, yeah, my stoma, since I've had that, which is about 6 years now, I've only been in hospital twice and I haven't really needed much time off work. So they're getting it back now, in a sense, because I'm there all the time when I'm working. And I got promoted to sergeant, you know, 2 years ago, and they were willing to promote me with a stoma. But I had to do a lot of educating the force or the police on life with a stoma, because they were a bit nervous about it. They're like, well, you can't work on the front line. Yes, you can, because you can buy stoma guards. And I showed them what stoma guards buy. It comes from America. So they bought it. The force paid for that. So it took me a while to convince them that I was still capable of working on the front line, not doing a back office job. And that's where I still am. I'm still on the front line. I'm now a sergeant on the front line. So I've been fortunate that the police have been very understanding and giving me lots of time. But I also learned the Equality Act inside out, but so did they. So we worked together in the end. We were working together for a while. It felt a bit one-sided, that they weren't interested. But then they started educating themselves and listening to me and what I'm capable of doing. So in the end, I had their full support. And then now they've been recruiting people that have got stomas, whereas before they never did. So now they're on. So it's been benefits. It's been tough. It's been stressful, but they've always paid me. So that took away a lot of stress.
I mean, I know I've seen on Twitter that you've got Clitus Cop. There's a couple, I think he's in Cornwall. A few others. I mean, I've never really got down to the nitty-gritty with it with my brother-in-law, because obviously my brother-in-law's fit and healthy. So, you know, apart from catching COVID a couple of times, getting public transport. Because obviously when you work for the Met, you can't live in London to work for the Met. You can't be living anywhere near the district that you're covering, which is the same for the majority of the police.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he's caught COVID a couple of times up and down on the train.
Yeah.
But it's getting into the nitty gritty of things. And the thing is, your job's relatively active. I have what would be classed as a sedentary job, which just involves running up and down 4 flights of stairs to go and speak with the MD in the other office down the other end. But it is scary going back to work after surgery. I mean, I'm very fortunate. Our silent MD, who owns the offices that we work at, he's always the way that he runs his buildings and the way he runs his office. There's a disabled toilet downstairs, which is the one I use because it's higher up off of the floor, because the other one is like, can only be explained as Harry Potter's broom cupboard. I can't, you can just about put your elbows out whilst you're sitting on the toilet. So it's better to use the one downstairs, especially if I've had a blowout or a leak.
Yeah.
And, I'm just very lucky that my boss is my husband. I can get away with a lot more working for him than I could for a normal generalized company. If I'm having a bad day, I tell him I'm having a bad day. So I work from home, but you don't have that luxury, do you?
No, I really don't. No, I just don't have that luxury. There are some roles in the police where you can work from home, but they're few and far. But certainly working frontline policing, it is very active. I did have issues around the toilets at our site, well, at our police station. They were just woefully inadequate. Even the disabled toilet was inadequate. There was nowhere to put supplies when I was having to put them in a sink. There's a lot of people that use that toilet, and so the sink isn't getting cleaned regularly enough. So it's like, where do you put your supplies? So that was difficult. So I then had to go back and say, right, you need to start making amendments across all your police stations within this force and change all these toilets, put shelves in, make them cleaner, give people space to be able to go and change their bag or empty a bag, depending on what you're using. So that when I went back to work, that was my biggest kind of type of issue, was there's nowhere really what I'd call lovely and clean to go and do this. So they had to make some changes. And they did. And I was concerned about being on the front line, getting into scraps with people, having the stoma. Am I going to damage it? Am I going to cause a hernia by fighting with people? So there were a lot of concerns, but they haven't gone away because things changed. And yeah, I just get on with it. And so it did cause stress. There were some stressful times, but now, like I say, the police are on board, so I can't complain. I really can't.
So was their main issue with you being on the front line more to do with the fact that, I don't know, a suspect or somebody that you was apprehended could cause further damage to your abdomen or your stoma?
Yeah. That was their biggest concern, was if you get kicked, punched in the stoma site, what's going to happen to it? Is it going to, you know, split open? Is something going to, you know, are you going to end up in hospital? Worst case scenario, could you die if something happened to your stoma? So they're looking at it from a safety point of view. They're probably also looking at it from a financial point of view, is could I sue them? So they're always going to look at that option as well. That's just being honest. So most of it was around safety, which is why I said to them, I can do it. You just need to provide this stoma guard that comes from America. And it's quite expensive. I said, I'll buy it. I said, I don't even mind buying it. But the police paid for it and it protects it. And I've put it through some tests, that stoma guard.
What have you been doing, leaving it downstairs and dropping a brick on it?
Pretty much. I did something really silly. I did another video for my channel, and I was comparing body armor guards. I didn't do it on the video because it would have looked wrong, but I had a baseball bat and I was hitting it to see how much it could take. And some guards couldn't take any, but the one that I have in the police, boy, that can take an impact. And I showed it to my occupational health. I said, here, watch this. This is me hitting it with a baseball bat. And they were horrified. They were literally like, I can't watch this. And I said, but I'm just showing you what it can tolerate. So it kind of worked, and yeah, but I don't always wear it.
I mean, how do you feel? Because I see you, standard police issue with frontline anyway, you're given body armor. So, you know, that your bottom half isn't protected, but your top half always is. Well, anything that's kind of aimed at from sort of like neck down to waist.
Yeah.
How do you feel when you have to go and apprehend suspects, or if you have to arrest anyone? Do you ever have that feeling or pit of dread, or are you like, no, I can handle myself, I'm fine?
Yeah, sometimes I do. Because I'm a sergeant, Well, a lot of the time when I go to a big incident, most of the major stuff's already happened. I'm going there to supervise it all being dealt with properly. But there are occasions when I will go to an incident and I think, yeah, I'm going to have to get hands-on with someone. I generally look to see how many PCs there are around that are going to assist in that. But I'm not shy with getting hands-on because I like to lead by example as well. So I will. But then I look at the size of them and think, you're quite large. I'm not. How much force am I going to have to use? How much energy is it going to take for me to get you on the floor? And is that pulling and me holding my stomach, because you hold your breath when you're doing things like that, am I going to cause a problem? So it is on my mind. It's always on my mind, but it doesn't stop me doing it because I love it. It's such a great job. So
you say that, though, the bigger they are, the harder they fall, quite literally. And it's normally the bigger ones that go down quite easily. It's the little ones that you need to worry.
Yeah, there are. Small people are quite surprising. struggle. So, yeah, it is. I am always conscious of it. I do always think. And like I said, I don't always wear the stoma guard. So then I'm even more conscious. So,
I mean, it's like incidents with me. So it's like I'm getting back active in February because our puppy Ruby should be 20 weeks beginning of February. So she likes running. So I'm going out with her and my daughter to start couch to 5K again. And I know from personal experience, if there's anything coming from my stomach, or if I know that I'm going to fall over or I'm going to go for a Burton, the first thing I do, I don't care about any other extremity. I hold my stomach. Yeah. It's just natural reaction now. Yeah, I protect my stomach over anything else. And it's like you can cause yourself an injury just by picking the kettle up wrong. There's no, you know, we've been having this conversations before. You're either predisposed to a hernia or you're not. It's just a catch 22.
Yeah.
And obviously, given the fact that you wear a stoma guard and given the fact that you have to wear body armour, wearing anything else with that can be quite cumbersome, can't it, and cause additional issues? Because just imagine the body armour is quite restrictive anyway, because it's all velcroed and all battened up and everything else. And from a female perspective, wearing Spanx at the best of times is like not being able to breathe. So I wouldn't want to impose myself that on myself 24/7. And it's just, I think going back to work, especially after having surgery, gives you a sense of purpose.
Absolutely, it does. Yeah.
And a sense of pride.
Yeah. I hate being off sick. It drives me nuts being off. So I can't wait to get back to work, because I agree with you. Because you know you've got a disability, if you like, if we call it that, and you know it causes you so many issues. I find that drives me to want to be at work even more, because I'm trying to escape what I've got by going to work, if that makes sense. I feel normal when I'm at work. Sometimes when I've been quite unwell and I look at everyone going to work and I feel not normal, whereas for me, being at work makes me feel normal, which makes me happier. So, and then there is the pride element of it as well, and doing a good job and knowing that you're out there helping people. So yeah, being off, I can't stand it. I cannot stand being off work, because then I don't feel normal. I'm always reminded that I've got issues. So yeah, being at work creates a normality for me.
Yeah, I think with a lot of us, I know from like myself, like personal experience and knowing others that are currently doing adult education in their 30s, because they wasn't able to in their 20s because they were so ill, and just wanting to make a better life for themselves and have that kind of life. I mean, the fact that you managed to pass the fitness tests and get into the police force, like with a Crohn's diagnosis, is pretty impressive in itself, because I've heard their fitness tests are quite brutal, shall we say.
They're not anymore.
Oh, they're not anymore?
No, they're quite toned out. Well,
oh, damn.
The fitness test to join, it has been scaled right down. That's easy. It's the ongoing fitness and maintaining your fitness and going back, because you have to go back twice a year and do all your self-defense refreshers, your fitness refreshers. So that gets a bit more demanding. But the actual entrance fitness test is nowhere near what it was when I joined. It's quite limited now. It's just a bleep test, really.
Is that now because of is it the police community support officers with the PCSOs and everything, because of opening doors? Because I know they have to pass some levels of that as well, yeah, to be able to.
The PCSOs also have to do a fitness test, which is very similar to a police officer fitness test. I don't know the ins and outs of why it's been diminished, but yeah, things have become a lot easier. To join the police now is a lot easier than it was when I joined 13 years ago. I think some of that's got politics involved, or to do with Boris Johnson's uplift and et cetera, which I'm not going to go into the politics. So they're having to bring more cops in to meet that Boris Johnson uplift that he had when he was in power. So I think they've made things a little bit easier to be able to get people in the door, but that doesn't always mean they're getting the right people in the door. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
No, sorry, I'm just having a giggle to myself, because a few years ago, me and my husband went down to Canterbury, and we was walking around Canterbury, and we was doing some shopping. It was quite late. It was quite dark. And I remember walking through Canterbury, and there's me going, oh, look at that lovely architecture. Aren't those lovely old houses, like, absolutely amazing? And then I've turned and looked, and Ben's rugby tackled someone to the floor. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? And he's like, he nicked a laptop out of the Apple store. Could you not see the security guards chasing him down?
No. I was too busy admiring the architecture.
And so there's Ben, who's like rugby tackled someone to the floor, who's ever nicked a laptop out of Apple. I'm guessing they'd smashed the laptop off of the stand.
Yeah.
And all I see is two security guards and two police officers running down, and Ben's like, yeah, it's down there.
Brilliant. Fair play to you.
Not going to be awake for a while. I was like, Jesus.
Fair play for getting involved.
Yeah. Oh, because I remember Ollie was saying to him, like, after that, he's like, have you ever considered a job in the force?
No.
Said I can rugby tackle someone. He said, but I ain't doing that. He's gone, I'm too fat for that.
Fair play to him. I like that. Get involved. Not many people do these days, do they? They see something happen on the street and they'd just rather get their phone out and film it rather than try and help somebody, which is a sad world that we live in now, and that with mobile phones. But
yeah, I think that's the problem with me and Ben. We come from that generation where we have that moral compass of helping helping someone rather than filming it. We have the moral compass, and which way does it go?
Yeah. Oh, look, there's someone being mugged. Let me get my phone out and film it. Brilliant. That's helpful.
I don't understand. It's the world of social media though now, isn't it? Is anything, I mean, it's like, I know my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, obviously she's a nurse, they don't do social media at all. Their daughters with no pictures of the bub up on social media or anything like that, because if the wrong person ever got hold of that, it could mean things. I mean, I've heard some stories back in the days. A family friend was a CID officer, and he was like, when I was 17, 18, because I thought about joining the police, which is probably a good job I didn't, given my health issues. But he was saying, are you sure you'd want it? And I said, it's like, why? And he said, well, we said, we've taken down a group. He said, and I'm sitting in my kitchen. He said, where's that laser light coming from? It's like someone in my back garden with a crossbow with a laser point on it.
Oh, my.
Wow. So, yeah, it's just a bit, it can be considered dangerous at times. I'm guessing that's why they all make you live outside of the force that you're actually in.
Yeah, generally. Although with our force, you can live in the same area you police. So I wouldn't do it. I'd say, no, I'd rather be posted somewhere else within the force. I wouldn't want to police the area I live. That's just asking for trouble, that is.
Do they still have the thing where you don't wear your uniform home? You have to change into civvies before leaving?
Yeah. They call it half blues. So you can leave your trousers. You don't have to change your trousers, but you should change your top and then put a coat on. And ideally, you should get changed, really, for security. You should. And then you're also told to change your route home every now and then as well. But yeah, you shouldn't really be travelling anywhere with any type of uniform showing. It's just asking for trouble, that is.
I mean, have you ever thought about doing anything other than the front line? Because obviously you've got the armed response unit as well as the driving. Nothing like that, or you're quite happy where you are?
Yeah, I'm kind of quite happy where I am. There are lots of different options you can choose, but the armed policing unit doesn't appeal to me. I never want to carry a gun. That just doesn't appeal to me. Road policing used to appeal to me, but not as much anymore. And then I'm thinking about the next promotion up, which is to inspector. So at the moment, that's more my thought process is going up rather than sideways. So that is going to be part of my next plan within the next year, is to start that promotion process up to inspector. So
how do you cope with the stress with that? Because I know the exams are quite intensive.
Yeah, they are. The exams are really, really hard. The sergeant exam was really difficult. The inspector's exam is a very similar one, but just as difficult. So for me, it's okay because I work four on, four off. So I do get four days off, so I can fit studying in around that. But if you want it, you've just got to crack on and do it. It's difficult. There are, if you like, if it's the right word, quieter roles in the police where you could get a bit of studying in while you're at work. But if you're the sergeant and you're managing the team, well, I just think, should you be studying at work when you've got a team to look after? So you just make it work. If you want it, you make it work. Yes, it is stressful. Yes, you're going to lose some of your home life because you're going to be studying for 6 months. It's only 6 months, isn't it? It's not a long, long time, really. So if you want it, make it work.
No, it's like I sit here thinking, so obviously dealing with what I deal with the agency, once I've got my license come May, June of this year, I'm setting up my own agency to deal with accountings with the agencies that we work with. Yeah. And then I'm sat there thinking, well, am I going to employ someone that has time off ill? Do I do what my husband's already done and extend the olive branch to, because those that are ill sometimes work harder than those that aren't. Because they have more to prove, so that they're a lot more diligent with their job when they need to be, and that kind of thing. So I'm sat here and I'm like, swings and roundabouts, because at the end of the day, when it does get down to it, once I've set up what I need to set up, I want to get back into forensic accounting because that's what interests me, and I have that brain on me where I like to catch people out.
Yeah, good, and I like that. It's a good brain to have. But you made a key point about a point to prove, but I always felt that I had to prove myself more than somebody that wasn't in my situation, because I always felt like, oh, any minute now I could go off sick and they're gonna be like, oh, he's off sick again. So I did always feel like every time I came back, I always felt like I had to work harder. I did feel like I had to prove myself. The reality is I didn't need to prove myself to anybody, but that's how I felt, and I would work a lot harder than others, and then that would end up making me ill anyway. So I had to have a long look at myself eventually and think, I don't need to prove myself. I've already proved on myself, already proved I can do the job. So why do I continue to feel that way? And I think that's a lot of what comes with having bowel disease, is what it does to you mentally as well, not just the physical, but what it starts doing to you mentally. Then it's being aware of that, isn't it? And acting in it.
It is. It is. It's like myself, so obviously I still on the immunosuppressants, which is basically low grade chemotherapy. You know yourself, it takes it out of you for 3 to 4 days after each infusion or injection.
Yeah.
And it's like my injection came second week in January, but I knew if I took it, it'd wipe me out. I couldn't finish revising for my exams. So I was overdue by 10 days before I took my injection. Literally, I got home from my exams. I was like, right, that's it. That's me gone for four days. I'll see you in a week.
Yeah. But they're the things we do, though, don't we? You're like, well, I won't have my injection. I've lost your voice. Speak again.
I was going to say, it's that thought process that we have. It's the... if I do it now, it's going to wipe me out, so I'm not really going to be capable of doing my job for a couple of days. Or do I leave it and do it on the days that I know that I've got R&R and that I don't need to work?
And that's the thing. We find ourselves delaying taking medication when perhaps we should. Because, again, it all comes back to what you're thinking in your head, don't you, really? They're not meds, so I've delayed them when I probably shouldn't have done.
it's the same with, because if you're anything like me, like with your Crohn's disease and everything else and the levels of pain and other bits and pieces that we go through, I take nerve blockers. I take opiates, not to mention I have to take cyclosine because they've put me on another medication to help with like my hormone issues that I'm having because of a massive cyst that I've got. And I've changed my meds now to nighttime. So I don't take anything at all in the day. I wait until I get home from work. So I get in at 4 o'clock, I take my first set, I take my second set at 8. And then I take my last lot at 11 just before I go to bed, just because I know for a fact that I know we're talking about work, but even driving, you're not meant to drive when you take that kind of medication. You can,
yeah,
but it can make you sleepy, which is tantamount to making you unsafe behind the wheel of a car.
Yeah.
So everybody knows within my family and circle of friends, if they need picking up at 10, 11 o'clock at night, they don't ring me because I ain't answering my phone. You're not getting picked up because it's just not happening. It's similar to, it's basically like having a couple of pints and getting behind the wheel of a car. It's exactly the same concept with medication.
Yeah.
It's the same concept. You wouldn't go into work after having a few alcoholic drinks unless you know that you can perform the task, or as you say, you're working in an office where stuff isn't secure and you don't have to rely on data protection or anything like that. Yep. So why would you do that with your medication? It's another catch 22, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm loving that your cat's trying to get involved.
Obviously, those that are listening, I've got the cat's trying to sit on my head.
That's brilliant.
But it is a catch 22, isn't it? And as a serving police officer, you have to be compass mentors on your job. So how do you manage that?
It's quite difficult. So I do focus on my own type of well-being, and I will say to my boss, if I don't think I'm properly fit for duty, I'll say to him, I'm fit to be here. I'm fit to do the office-based stuff. But if it comes to going out, the other sergeants on the team, they're going to have to go out and do it. Because I can't. And I used to feel guilty about that, but I don't anymore, because I've got to look after myself. And the other sergeants on my team, they like going out anyway. But then I feel like, oh, then I need to prove myself the next time. So again, it goes back to that proving yourself thing. But I just take a lot more time of being conscious of how my body feels. And I don't feel ashamed to go into my boss and say, I'm not fit to do all my duties. I can do some, but I'm not fit to do all of them. And I'm very fortunate that I have been throughout the police, is all my bosses have always been very understanding. And the one I've got at the moment is incredible. So having that security of knowing that you've got a boss that supports you takes that away. But yeah, if I don't feel right, then I'll just go and tell him. I mean, you know, it's not all the time. Maybe once a month I might say, I don't think I can deal with it tonight. Nights are generally harder to get through, because when the fatigue kicks in, fatigue is awful. People think fatigue's just being tired, and it isn't.
Oh, no.
So being on nights and getting fatigue is dreadful. On occasions, I've had to say, boss, I can't be. I'm going to have to go home. Then they say, yeah, that's cool. Go home. It's not a problem. So, again, I'm just fortunate that I've got a good boss. So that takes away a lot of that worry for me. But there's people out there that are not going to have good bosses, that it's going to create more stress, create more mental health problems, upset them more physically. So I do feel for those people that are struggling with uncooperative or not understanding bosses. That's got to be very difficult.
I mean, I remember years ago when I was doing, I used to do return to works for those that had been off. And then when I'd been off, I used to have to go and do my return to work with the manager of the next team, because obviously I was the team manager, so I have to have somebody else to do my return to work. And the amount of times I got so fed up of having to explain things and explain what was in my hospital letters and explain what was in my notes. Oh, well, what's this? What? Why have you had time for this? I'm like, hang on a minute. I'm doing a return to work for someone that's had 3 days off because they had a hangover.
Yeah.
And it's their second warning, and if they do another one, I'm probably going to lose my call and have a massive, great big go at them, and everyone's going to hear above the partition. Because it's not that they've actually been ill, it's because they've got a hangover and they've admitted it because they've got to delete posts off of Facebook.
Brilliant.
You're questioning me because I've got a hospital appointment and can I not swap the time? Do you know how difficult it is to get an appointment with the NHS as it is?
Oh, isn't it? It really is, isn't it? And that's the other thing we have to do, don't we? We almost find ourselves, I don't think justifying is the right word, but certainly explaining in a lot more detail. When, like you say, someone's been off sick because they're hungover and they don't have to provide much of an explanation. But sometimes I feel that over the years, I've kind of over-explained things because I think I need them to understand. They need to understand what I'm saying. So I'll over-explain it. And really, there was never any real need. But it's the same with hospital appointments. I've been, the same. I got this hospital appointment, it's on a duty day. And a lot of the times, whilst they are understanding, they're like, well, you've got 4 rest days. Can you not change it to a rest day? No, I cannot get the NHS to say, oh, yeah, that's not a problem, Chris. We'll move that one for you.
I know at the moment that even an emergency appointment, an emergency referral at the moment, even if it's back to a team that you're under, is 18 weeks. That is nearly 6 months.
Yeah.
8, 12, 16, 18. Yeah, that's just over 5 month wait. For an emergency appointment. And then again, do you think you can change it?
No, I can't. I've waited ages. But they do. People do think you can just change it, but you can't. That's the reality, isn't it?
The guilt I used to have with hospital appointments and everything else, especially with working. So if I had a morning appointment and I knew that appointment was going to be a quick one, I'd work a late shift.
Yeah.
If I knew it was an appointment that was going to probably end up me spending the majority of my day in the hospital, I'd take a day's holiday.
Yeah.
And I don't feel that it's fair that a normal person can go to a hospital appointment and not have to take it as holiday.
Yeah.
Yet because you have a hospital appointment every 2 months, that they expect you to take that as a day's annual leave. I don't think that's very supportive or fair.
No, I don't think that is. That does just feel a bit wrong because it feels like you're having pressure put on you and you're having to use your annual leave, which is for resting time and going on holiday. You shouldn't have to use that for appointments. I think that's really wrong. And when you're using your annual leave, are you feeling supported by using annual leave? No one's going to feel supported, are they?
No, so, not if you can only take a 3-day holiday because you've used the rest of it for hospital appointments.
Exactly, yeah. Because that could be the reality for some, isn't it? You've used so much of your annual leave on hospital appointments. How much time have you really got left to actually go on holiday? And as an employer, then they should be giving you that time rather than saying that that's got to be annual leave. So
it's like COVID. As bad as COVID was, it has done so much for the workplace with regards to flexibility as a general whole. Yeah. I mean, Americans have a thing called duvet day. So if they're having a bad day, they can have a duvet day. We don't have that in the UK. No. We have you suck it up and you go to work. But being able to, I believe, the work messenger that went off the other day. So my husband was working from home because I had to go in and do my exam. So he had to stay home with the dogs because there was nowhere I was taking the dogs to sit in my 5 hours worth of exams. And I had a message from somebody else saying, oh, we said, I'm off sick. I'm going to be working from home today in horse style. In horse stance. So I meant laying flat on his stomach with his hands on the floor on his laptop. And I was just like, it's so nice that as a company that we have such a flexible work policy with regards to not just me, but any member of staff that we have. And it's nice to see that especially the small businesses are taking into account for people's physical health, mental health, and allowing the option to work from home. Because a lot of people say, oh, well, if you're working from home, then you're not working. Well, you are, and you tend to do more when you're at home than what you do when you're in the office because you get messaged. And I think because I come from a corporate background, time is money in corporate background. Corporate are absolutely ruthless. There's no two ways about it. Time is money. If you're off, you're costing them money, so therefore they're not making money, and that's just the way the cookie crumbles. Mm. but it's just seeing a lot of people struggle to get back into work after having surgery as well. And I don't know whether it's just because of the type of job that they're going for, or just that the Equality Act and the Disability Act is maybe not read or quoted as much as it should be.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think that's quite key. And it's giving people the knowledge and the access to the Equality Act so people can understand what they are entitled to from their employer. But at the same time, how much do employers really look at the Equality Act? The police are good at it. I'll give them that. They are good at it. But for smaller companies or for people that only employ three or four people, like you say, time is money. And if they've got one off sick, do they really want them employed? Probably not. So are they going to go and look at what the Equality Act is? Probably not. So I think for kind of biggerish firms, I think more are aware, but I think more needs to be done. I certainly think in the private sector, a lot more needs to be done to share the Equality Act and what it's there for. Because if they can make reasonable adjustments for someone, they're still going to be productive and they're more likely to be at work or work from home and do the work. So give them the reasonable adjustments, make those adjustments, and that'll probably keep them there. But some employers probably won't want them, so they won't do it, and people will resign and leave, which is a shame. So there does need to be more knowledge, because it benefits both sides, the Equality Act. It benefits the employer and the employee. So there needs to be a bigger knowledge of the Equality Act, in my opinion.
I just don't understand how a lot of companies, especially from the times that I was applying for jobs, but I think it's okay to ask how much time that you've had off of work, or how many hospital appointments that you've had. At the end of the day, your job prospectus or application should not be based on whether you're ill or not. It should be based on your skill set.
Yep, I agree. And that's exactly all it should be about, is your skill set. Can you do the job? That box, tick both of those boxes, then you should be employed. I think it's horrendous that you could be sitting there at a job interview and in the back of your mind you're thinking, in a minute now they're going to ask me about my sickness record. That shouldn't be allowed to be asked, in my opinion. It just shouldn't.
I think there's some companies that don't, but I know that especially companies within retail, especially customer service face-to-face, it is something that is asked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't think that's right. But then, you know, we're looking at it from a point of view of people that have got health issues. So I wonder how people that haven't got health issues, whether it'd be interesting to do a podcast with someone that hasn't and see what their views are, whether they'd be thinking, no, you shouldn't be doing that job. You have too much time off. Let someone else do the job. So we do support it from a point of view of people that have got illnesses. So it would be interesting to get another opinion of someone that does run a business.
I remember years ago when I had my reversal, I went back to work earlier than I should have, just because I was having a lot of pressure put on me about when are you coming back? We need you. And I was like, okay, well, I did say I was meant to be off for 3 months. I went back after 6 weeks. And then obviously I noticed that the reversal hadn't worked, and obviously I've been left incontinent from that. And the fight I had with occupational health,
yeah,
and the fight I had with my boss to allow for 10 minutes in every hour for me to go to the toilet if I needed, yeah, to go to the toilet. It was absolutely, it was insane.
Yeah.
And then I got told, well, you can't tell anybody that you're having the break. And obviously you'll have to log into the phone system and say that you're going for a rest break or everything else so we can keep track of what you're doing. And I was just like, do you ask the person three desks over when they go for a rest break how long they're spending in the toilet and why they're going? It was just lunacy at its worst. And yeah, the fight I had to get those rest breaks implemented, because it was either have the rest break or...
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
fecal incontinence is not fun.
No, it really isn't. I've been there, had it, and it's not fun. And yeah, and then, but again, you then start feeling you have to justify it all the time. You have to start explaining it to people, and it just comes back to how it makes you feel. You know, you start to feel uncomfortable by saying, I need to go to the toilet again. I've got to go to the toilet again. And then you find yourself having to justify and explain yourself to people when we shouldn't have to ever really have to feel that way.
Well, the worst thing was a couple of months into that with the rest breaks, we had passes to get in and off of floors and in and out of certain parts of the building because it was all very data protection and everything else. Everything had to be shredded at the end of the day. You couldn't even leave a bit of paper on your desk, even if it had a telephone number on it, because you'd get in big trouble. And I used to have to scan myself out. Scan myself into the next building to get into the toilet, scan myself back through, and then scan myself to get back into the main office. And I was just like, in the end, I was like, you know what, just be easier just to have the accident again. There you go. Whoops, Daisy, couldn't get through the doors.
Get the cleaners in. Yeah. Oh, no, it's horrendous being in concert. It's absolutely horrendous. Yeah, thankfully, having a stoma, I don't have to have that worry, but I've been there and it's awful. Absolutely awful.
Me and my friend were having a conversation. She's like, would you go back to it? And I said, do you know what? I said, I love the job. I said, but I just did not love occupational therapy's approach to anything and everything with regards to bathroom habits or days off or do you know what I mean? You couldn't pay me to go back. Couldn't pay me to go back now. Don't get me wrong. They gave me excellent references. My references from there are absolutely glowing. But it's still not the point. I was very good at my job.
Yeah.
It just happened to be that I was too ill to do the job for them to warrant paying what they was paying me at the time. It's just absolutely insane.
Yeah, it is. But are you in a better place now?
It's taken me a long time to get where I am now, but I am in a better place. It's just it's just about managing my expectations and hoping the next 25 years pay off.
Yeah. There is that, isn't there? Because, we've got a lot of life ahead of us still, haven't we? So anything can change, can't it? At any given time, anything can change.
Yeah.
Anything. Any other part of your health could change, couldn't it? So,
basically, with me and my husband, the business that we do, the two businesses that we do have, and then the new one that I will be setting up at some point, the aim is when we hit 60, they're sold, they're done, we don't have to manage them anymore. That's our retirement pot, and thus we can go and live the life the life somewhere.
We work hard enough, don't we? We all work hard, so why not have a retirement plan?
Well, this is the other thing that doesn't get explained as well, especially for those that, whether you're in work or out of work because of your health or because of surgery. It's like checking like your national insurance contributions towards your pension, because I can't remember how long ago, but job seekers allowance and employment support allowance pay your NI contributions, which then entitles you to a full state pension when you do retire. Yeah. But if there's any break in that certain point, you have to go back to make the contributions, or else you don't qualify for a full state pension. It's crazy.
Wow. I didn't know that.
So I only know that because of the field that I work in, I deal with accountants and having to make sure that anybody that's self-employed are paying their NI contributions on a yearly basis, or else they won't qualify for a full pension.
Wow, that's incredible.
Did you not know?
I didn't know that. That is incredible. Oh, it could go on to a whole other conversation about other people that have never worked a day in their life but still get everything. But yeah, that's a different conversation, that one.
for those listening, if you have had time out and you haven't had national insurance contributions paid, you can contact them and find out what needs to be paid back in to top your pension pot back up. But that does take time. So that's the little bit of financial advice for Louise. I really don't talk about my job. And I suppose let's face it, the job that I do is a little bit boring. So it's, well, I find it interesting, but others would find it boring and go, huh?
Yeah.
Whereas working for the police is a lot more interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. It has times when it's not interesting. It has times when I get out of bed in the morning and think, why do I do this? But overall, it's quite varied. I do get quite a variety. So, but it's each to their own, isn't it? And you like what you do, and I'm sure there's lots of other people that like what you do. So it's just what you're happy with and what you're comfortable with and what pays the bills.
Well, I do have to laugh, because part of what I'm doing, I've had to do redo my functional skills. And functional skills has to be redone every year for what you're doing for your diploma and what you're doing it in. Well, this year I picked English. And they said to me, so I got my marks back from my English because my English was marked the same day that I did my exam. It's my other one. I don't get back for 3 weeks. And he said, you got an A. And I went, did I not tell you about blog post?
Oh, superb.
I had to write two blog posts. One was about a day in the office.
Oh, superb.
And the other one was about environmental health. And because of like the policy that we have at work, we've got anything that can be recycled in our office building is recycled. We have different bins and battery bins and all sorts. So I just literally worked off the things. Oh, you got an A. I was like, yay.
Hope so. That's brilliant, isn't it?
It's the easiest 600 words I've ever read.
I bet when you saw that one, you're like, oh, happy days.
Do that with my eyes closed with a bag over my head and my hands tied behind my back.
Exactly. What have you have to do?
Spreadsheets, they're different functional spreadsheets, different story. I used to be the person that breaks them. So
spreadsheets. I can't do spreadsheets. Just can't. I can't stand them.
I had to do a refresh. So with forensic accounting, there's specific functions and functionalities that you need to know. So there's like a goal seeks to like work out whether it's 8%, 10%, how to increase that figure and what to find. And I was sitting there and the laptop that they give you to use, I use a Mac. I don't use a Windows laptop. I've never used a HP laptop. I'm like, it's not here. It's not where it's meant to be. It's not here. I spent like 20 minutes of my exam just working out how to use Excel on that computer. And it's just like, it's like trying to explain things. It's like the accountants that we've got, they don't know, but they're getting the boot soon because they finally got to me to the point of I actually want to go to where they currently work and rip their head off. Because the accounting systems that I use for the businesses that I manage, where it's come to like the end of quarter for corporation tax and VAT quarter, they've duplicated. So not only have they duplicated, they've triplicated all of the entries I've reconciled. Wow. So I logged into one of the accounts that I manage yesterday, and I think I'd reconciled something like 300 entries over the period of 6 weeks. Oh. It's triplicated them. Oh. And the problem that you've got with like police officer, like being a police officer, being an accountant, that there's a strong code of ethics that you have, that you have to abide by, that you have to stick to. Yeah. I now have to go and delete all those entries off, even though they've caused them, and then explain it to the next accountant when it comes to refiling for the next quarter that they triplicated all the entries.
Wow.
And that I had to delete them off because they're not allowed to touch anything.
Brilliant.
You wow. touched it, you broke it, you fix it. No, that's my job.
Good luck with that.
And this is the stresses of life as a general whole.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you know what? Stress doesn't really impact my stomach. It's just my general mental well-being and heart rate that it does.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll agree with that. I've always kind of said I'm not convinced. Stress has always aggravated the Crohn's disease. There probably has been times, but since having a stoma, stress doesn't affect that. No, it just doesn't. I don't think it affects it. It carries on doing what it has to do. And I've never thought my stoma is not doing something because of stress. So yeah, I don't think it does.
So I had an email last week because obviously I'd rung someone up and I'd had a go at them. I'd had a go at them. It was more than justified. It was like one of those very condescending talking down to my mum. Yeah. And I had an email. Did you want to sort mine out as well? Because they said that they'd never had such a stern talking down in their life.
Brilliant. Superb.
I was just like... The thing is, the issues that I'm having with my hormones because of the inclusion cyst at the moment, it's just I'm normally a pretty chill person. And I was just like, it's like the fifth time I told them to sort something out and they hadn't sorted it. And I was just like, right, enough's enough, because if that's not sorted, I can't pay this person. I can't sort that person. Yep. They'd been taking the mix. So I'd rung them up and threatened them with a cease friend with a CMJ. They paid it.
Worked, didn't it? Got them to pay. Bless them.
Good old small claims court.
Yeah, damn right. Fair play.
Well worth the £445.
Yeah, absolutely. People need to pay. Simple as that.
Anyway, we'll wrap up on that. So, yeah, work life after stoma surgery. A massive thank you to Chris for taking part. And, we'll be back with another podcast soon. For any of you interested in support wear or anything that we've spoken about within the podcast, you can head to www.pelicanhealthcare.co.uk, and anything to do with regards to ileostomy, urostomy or colostomy will be on the website for you to browse at your convenience. So a massive thank you to Chris for taking part, and we'll be back with another podcast soon. So thanks.
Bye.